and welcome to Alchemy 101. Transformation, that's the name of the game here, and this is where we aim to mine a few nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even if at first things might seem a little bit contrary, like a nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and it's lovely to have your company today. Well, I say I'm the Practical Alchemist, but that's just a label, really, isn't it? It gives you an idea of what I do, what I'm interested in, but is that the real me? Do I even know the real me? Does any of us know the real us? I think the sad truth is that too many people never manage to connect with the truth of who they are, and that's what we're exploring today. My guest today is a spiritual teacher and holistic psychologist who teaches people how to awaken to the truth of who they are and live life as their true self. He is Patrick Mirando, and he's also the author of Waking Up to Yourself, A Guide to Living Your Truth. Now, you might think that knowing yourself is easy, but not necessarily. Getting to the core of who you are is a tough ask for most of us because of our conditioning. And I put it to Patrick that it's extraordinary just how much of what we think is the real us is just that conditioning. Here's Patrick.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we've all been conditioned. We've all got that programming within us. And a lot of that programming has actually helped us survive. Without some of the programming, we wouldn't all be here. We wouldn't be cautious when we cross the road. We wouldn't know how to prepare or plan for anything. So a lot of the conditioning can actually be helpful. But when we're born as pure awareness. We're born as our true self within a body. And as we grow, we're called the name, and then that name becomes who we think we are. So we think we are our body. And the thing we don't realize is our body is forever changing. So, you know, I don't actually have the same body I did when I was a baby. Every cell in our body actually changes every 7 years.
Yeah.
So our body changes around our true self, or around our awareness or our soul. And so we just get taught that we're our body, and then from there we get taught that we're our emotions, or we're taught that we're our thoughts, and it just goes on and on from there. But we're not taught this out of malice. We're taught this from people who they themselves were taught the same thing. So they're just teaching us what they think us to be, not who we truly are, because they're not aware of who they truly are.
Exactly. So true. Right. So then, you know, you're talking about thoughts, beliefs come in there, but, you know, just how we identify ourselves, and, you know, even thinking about how we introduce ourselves to each other. And, you know, in some cultures, it's just very common to say, what do you do? As if that's an identifier, that's who you are. You know, you identify yourself through what you do in this world. And that's not really the true you necessarily either.
No, not at all. So, you know, I say, you know, I work as a spiritual teacher and a psychologist. I always say I work as a spiritual teacher and psychologist. Yeah. I don't say that's who I am.
Correct.
So I'm always me, but my role that I'm in always changes. So right now I'm the interviewee. Sometimes I might be the interviewer, but I'm always me. And that really changes all the time.
Yeah. I think that's I started doing that a while back. Yeah. Because I started getting annoyed when people would come up to me and say, so what do you do then? You know, can't you just meet me as a person, as you know who I am?
Yeah.
But I have to say that at that point, probably I didn't even know who I was myself fully.
Yeah.
But just talking about getting annoyed, then, you know, you've got emotions which are constantly sublimated because we don't feel that we should have certain emotions, and, you know, we don't know where they're coming from. Emotions play a huge part in this as well, don't they?
Yeah, completely. And emotions are really our entry point into our true self, because the more we know how we feel, and the more we feel bad or unpleasant, it's generally telling us we're more disconnected from our truth. So, and our emotions are also indicators of our conditioning that is misaligned with our truth. So it's really important. Our emotions are really our alarm bell, is what I call them. And they'll really tell us, they'll be the entry point to understanding what our thoughts are, what our beliefs are, our perceptions, how we're viewing things, and whether that aligns with our true self or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit more about thoughts and beliefs as well in a bit, but I want to say, you know, I want you to talk a little bit more about emotions And the fact that for a lot of us, we're taught that certain emotions are bad and certain emotions are, you know, okay. But we have a very odd relationship, I think, with emotion. So tell us a little bit more about that and how it affects us and how it relates to the true self a bit more.
Yeah. So we're all born with all of the emotions. So we all have happy, sad, angry, calm, upset, guilty, disappointed. Not all of them come when we're born, but we all have them inbuilt into our DNA, I guess, into imprinted in us. And how they work is they work as motivators towards action. So emotion is energy in motion, which motivates action. And so part of our job is to understand that even the unpleasant ones, which we label as bad, I just call them unpleasant or shadow emotions, they also have a use in helping us move towards things that benefit us and move towards what our true self is wanting for us as well.
Yeah.
So if we always felt happy, as an example, we wouldn't actually know we felt happy. We would
Correct.
Just feel like this state, we'd feel in a state of bliss. There'd be no relative point that we're comparing it to, which in that case would give us no direction. So each emotion actually has a distinct tool that it offers us to live as our true self. So sad offers us the opportunity to find what makes us happy. Disappointed offers us the opportunity to learn. Guilt offers us the opportunity to reflect on our behavior to see if it's aligned with our true self. Anger can help us set our will or exert our will. So all the emotions that we've learned from others that are bad, they actually serve a use. And if we know how to utilize them, we can utilize them that way, but not get stuck in them in perpetuating cycles of suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose this is what people these days would call emotional intelligence and, you know, helping people improve their or augment their emotional intelligence, I guess, is really a huge part of maintaining mental health and, you know, preventing people from going into a downward slide of, you know, overwhelming emotion that might lead to poor mental health.
Yeah, that's right. And lately I've been also using the word, not just mental health, but emotional health.
Yeah.
Because mental only affects us when we feel the emotion. So the emotions are the bigger component than just the mental part of it, which is the thought component. And so the more we actually recognize the connection and the link between thinking and the emotion and how they join and how they can assist us live our truth or how they can actually disconnect us and pinch us off from our truth. The more we can then work to moving towards well-being and a bigger clarity within our minds and emotional states.
And here's a question for you, right? Where do emotions come from?
I don't know if that's an answer, if there is an answer. Firstly, we can say biologically they come from within our minds, and they are generally imprinted in us, the energy that moves through our body. In terms of where they come from prior to that, emotions are just energy. So our thoughts are energy. So our thoughts, we say they come from our mind, but some of them just come and pop in, but we don't know where they come from. Some of them come from our conditioning. The thing is, usually, though, I'm not sure exactly where they come from. It's really just important to know what they're connected to and what sort of thinking patterns they're connected to, because they can really indicate what belief patterns you have and whether to utilize that to live your truth or to be more allowing of that emotion so that you can live your truth. Because most of the time, what we want to do is just chase away the unpleasant ones and just move towards the pleasant ones, which doesn't always serve us either.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that was a bit of an unfair question, I suppose, but I just wanted to see if you had an answer to that. And it's like
from
thought.
The universe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like thought, nobody knows really where thought comes from. I mean, really. And some people, I mean, I have a theory that actually nobody actually has a thought. It all just comes into us from the ether, possibly. We don't know. Scientists have tried to find out where thought comes from and they have no idea. But
that's right.
But this thing about always just wanting to chase the pleasant emotions and not acknowledging the bad emotions, that's actually becoming a bit, or has become a bit toxic. When we've had this, you know, years of everybody trying to be positive all the time and saying, oh, you know, you've got to be happy. It doesn't work like that though, does it?
No, not at all. So firstly, if we didn't let ourselves feel those unpleasant emotions, we actually can't utilize them as tools. So like I said, if we don't allow ourselves to feel sad, then we can't firstly grieve away pain that we have. We can't find direction towards what makes us happy. I know me, myself, I was usually growing up, I was actually mostly more emotionally numb. So while I had a little bits of direction, I really didn't really have much passion that led me towards anything. And the more I woke up to myself and understood my emotions, it helped me find those passions not just from the pleasant ones, but also from the unpleasant ones and the direction they push me into. So the more we understand both sides and utilize them, the more we can really live a richer, fuller life.
Yeah, I think probably I was a little bit like that myself growing up. Because of the conditioning, you kind of shut yourself off from certain emotions, don't you? Because I don't know whether that's because as a youngster, you can't really cope with that and it's just easier to shut down. And of course, there's nobody around you. There's no adult around you saying, that's okay, you know, emotions are good, you know, let it go. Don't, you know, don't get lost in your emotions. Just acknowledge them and move on.
Yeah, and
I mean, we said just before we started recording this that I'm loving this book because it's like a kind of thing that I would have wished I could have had earlier in my life to help me not go through all the anguish that has followed me through life and other people through life to get to where they, where I can now hopefully say, I think I know who I am now.
Yeah, which is wonderful. And me too, like I wrote the book and I work as a psychologist and I was teaching this stuff. And I was really teaching a lot of times about controlling emotions, which is a useful strategy, but it's not an all-encompassing strategy for wholeness. So for me, writing the book was really about me feeling every emotion that I was writing about. Like I was writing about the thoughts, but I was also mostly writing about the emotion. So whichever emotion I wrote, I was living in that for however long I was writing it for. So I had to learn how to sit with my loneliness, with my sadness, with my anger, my hate, my resentment, and really just knowing how to be okay with that. And I knew how to be okay with that only from falling off so many times, which is how I was able to understand it and put all the pieces together to be able to write Waking Up to Yourself.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because we are taught really, well, we're taught from a young age to control our emotions, right? Not to acknowledge them. I mean, I'm not saying that we have to go on a rampage or anything like that, an emotion-fueled rampage, but acknowledging our emotions and not sublimating them is hugely important, right?
They're completely important, and it's validating that we feel them, and we do feel them all. And the thing is, it's just about differentiating the ones that serve us to live our truth and the ones that, yes, it's okay to feel and just let them out and then move on and not necessarily act upon those emotions.
Yeah.
Because just like you said, it's not about I feel angry, so I'm going to go punch things or hurt people, or I feel disappointed, so I'm just going to give up every single time. It's really knowing how to utilize the emotion to best serve us to live as our true self or as our spirit.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've talked about the conditioning. So there's a lot of conditioning goes on as we're growing up that takes us away from our true self. And then part of that conditioning, okay, so emotions come out of that, right? Because we're often doing things that don't align with us. And then that can cause all kinds of different emotions. But there's also this thought, this thing called thought and belief. Now, I was always taught that belief is just a strongly held thought, because a lot of people set a lot of store by belief, and you know they don't want their beliefs shaken.
Yes,
but again, beliefs aren't always ours, and they're not always in alignment with who we are and what we are, our true selves. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, firstly, we're not born with any beliefs. We're not born thinking anything. We're just born as we are and seeing the world as it is. And we're not even born seeing separation between us and the world. It's only when we get given a name and we get treated as our body that we start to think, and when we learn language, which is part of beliefs, that we say, oh, that must be the word and I must be this word.
Yeah.
So often we label ourselves as words in that regards. And from those words, we give words more reality than the reality itself. So what that really means is we make the word, so that's a banana, rather than it is just what it is. My word is irrelevant to what it is, but the word is just a useful communication tool for us to discuss and be able to pass something that we deem as and have an agreement what that actually means to us.
So interesting, isn't it? Do you think language gets in the way of our finding our true selves or getting a way back to our true selves?
I think it definitely can get in the way, but it can also be another entry point to go back into there. Because the language, which are the perceptions or the beliefs, really are the things that trigger the emotion. So that's how we can work our way backwards. And we can use language. It's kind of like, I think I've heard a parable where you use like a splinter to remove another splinter.
Oh,
So language can be like that. We have to also know how to drop the splinters eventually, but But to get back to our true selves, because we're using language right now, and that's what we're doing. We're talking. If we didn't have this, then no one could hear our message. No one could hear what you're offering and or what I'm offering.
True.
Why would we write a book if language was so irrelevant?
Of course, that's a very good point. And talking of messages, it's time to hear some messages from our station sponsors. So we'll take a short break right now. Stay with us for more Patrick Morando right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Patrick Morando. Patrick is a spiritual teacher and holistic psychologist who teaches people how to awaken to the truth of who they are and live life as their true self. Now, I wanted to talk more about beliefs and how many of us hold beliefs that aren't in alignment with our true selves. These can be strongly held beliefs, and that might sound contradictory. So I asked Patrick how then these beliefs become installed and how we then might identify whether these are truly our beliefs, whether we should keep them, drop them, or indeed have any beliefs at all. I started to get all existential there, but here was Patrick's reply.
Yeah, so beliefs, firstly, like I said before, that we're not born with any beliefs. And from there, we learn different beliefs, and we usually learn them from others. So we don't really know what reality is like when we're born. So whatever we're taught, we'll believe. So we'll believe, you know, Santa Claus is real. Now, I remember as a kid, I vividly remember this, that I believe one of my friends said he had a car that dragged a whale out of the water, and I remember believing it, and even today I think, how could I believe such a thing? We just believe what we hear, and as we go on, that belief then creates an emotional validity to it, so we feel it to be true, because a belief is just a perception we've heard repeated again and again and again, and what that then does is creates an emotional response to it. So then I believe it, and then I feel it to be true, and then I feel it to be true, I believe it even more, and it creates that loop, that feedback loop into itself. And believing it also serves us. So if I believe I'm unworthy, and that's what I've been taught, if I believe that, then every time I'm deemed as unworthy, it's actually going to hurt me less because I already believe it about myself. So beliefs actually then serve to protect us from our own emotional states in themselves. So a lot of times our beliefs are just self-preserving beliefs, and we hold on to them because they feel true. Beliefs create a foundation for the world that we walk in, and when we feel that foundation, we feel a sense of safety and security, so we hold on to them. Part of our job is to kind of look at, just because I have that foundation, is that necessarily the foundation that I want, or is that just the foundation of safety, not necessarily the foundation of fullness, living my truth? And that's really where we want to differentiate that, because a lot of the times we just do it for safety, not necessarily for that fulfillment of our true self.
Right, yeah. What I always talk about is how we live by stories. Stories are how we navigate. So we tell ourselves stories, and I guess those are also beliefs. Our beliefs
exactly
are also
right.
The stories that we tell ourselves, yeah. So then how do you identify whether that's your story that is a real story, a true story, or a story that some, I mean, in other words, how do you know whose life you're living?
Yeah. Well, you're always living your own life. You may be just living your own life less aligned to yourself and more aligned to other stories. So part of it is our inner truth. So our true self, I'll go back to our true self for a moment. For me, that's our spiritual essence, our awareness, our consciousness. What that has within us, it has a sense of its own, I call it the gentle call. So it sort of gently calls us in directions. And no one else's story could ever match our direction all the time.
Right.
So eventually, if I'm living someone else's story, I'm going to feel some level of conflict in that eventually. And I might not feel it for a while because I'm used to living by that story, but the more I connect to my truth, it's going to feel more and more uncomfortable to live by that. And that would be more the subtle version. The less subtle version is, if you're feeling crap, you're listening to someone's story that you learned, and it's a story that's definitely not serving you and not yours.
Yes, I can relate to that. I think we've both experienced that. And you get to a very uncomfortable place, don't you?
Yeah. And often what we'll do, though, we won't let go of that uncomfortable place until we're super uncomfortable, because we really love our stories and they feel so true and we feel so validated by holding on to them.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got in your book, you have some ways, or you outline some ways to help people connect to their true selves. I want you to talk us through one of them. It's the true self breath. So that's a way of really kind of going inside and finding out who you are. Can you take us through that? Because I think it's a really simple thing to do, and you can do it on a daily basis or just now and again. And I'm sure it would really help people.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it's something I practice all the time. And it's really an anchoring into the truth of your being, anchoring into your spirit and soul, and using your breath as that anchor.
Yeah. So how do you do it?
Yeah. So the first step would be to intuitively go into within your body and find where you feel your core of your body. So for me, I feel it just below my belly button. Everyone might feel it differently. And you might feel, as you grow more and more, that it moves. So the first step would just be to close your eyes and focus on that. And what we do is we focus on that. We set the intention that I want to connect to my true self, or I want to align more with my true self. And that's really important, because our intention is really important for where our energy flows. And so once we've done that, we can breathe in and then breathe down to that core. And the core will be about the size of a golf ball. So imagine that, like a light going into that area. And so you breathe. So imagine breathing in down to my core. And then as I breathe out, I imagine the air coming out of the core. So it's like shining out of my belly button in that regards. And so you can do that 3 times. You can do that as many times as you need to, but it is breathing in through to your core and then breathing out your core, and breathing in and then out. And it really comes, like I said, from the intention first and then the breathing. And it's going to feel like a subtle shift. Sometimes you might not even notice it. You'll get better at noticing it the more you do it. But that shift is really profound and create a lot of change in your life.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's so simple, but then you don't have to make too much of a meal of it to get really profound change in our lives. Yeah, I love that. Thank you for explaining that one. Recommend people do that regularly. I'm going to start doing it as well. I think it's really lovely. And then, you know, getting back to, I said we wanted to talk a bit about reality and what reality is. And truth, our true selves. What is truth? So can you talk to us a little bit more on that? I mean, how do we know? How do we know what's true?
Yeah. Well, true can be what we believe. So that's not necessarily the ultimate truth, but it's going to feel true. I'll go back to the question. You mentioned reality, so I'll start there first.
I went off on a tangent.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I think it's all connected. That's great. So reality is, if we look at the world or ourselves, it's really how we perceive it. And what we perceive through are our 5 senses. That's what we majoritively perceive through. So reality is, I am this physical body. If we go deeper than that, really reality is that everything is energy vibrating at different frequencies and different vibrational speeds. And so if we take our 5 senses out of the equation, then we're all just energy. And so our true self is our energetic essence within our physical body that is still energy, but vibrating at a slower pace. So really that's what I deem as our true self. And some people call it consciousness. Some people call it awareness. I call it the true self. And it's something that I've connected to within myself through a lot of meditation, a lot of years of meditating, and finally sort of just awakening. Said, oh my gosh, I'm not my body. There's something in here that I was never able to, that's not tangible. I've never able to put my finger on enough. And this is what it is. So for me, the reality is the reality. It's everything we speak about. There's thoughts, like I guess we can say, that are more closely point to truth, and thoughts that are more deviate further from the truth, and perceptions and beliefs. So no thought at the end of the day is the ultimate truth. It's impossible to do. But we can just, like I said before, use language. I think I heard another parable was, don't mistake the finger pointing at the moon for the moon itself.
Yeah.
So our thoughts can point to who we are, but it isn't who we are.
Yeah, exactly. It's always that step apart. That's great. Thank you for explaining that. And the thought then is often behind the emotion. So
That's right.
then we have to deal with the emotions, not deal with them, but you know, you write about 8 steps towards allowing emotions, because I think we are told so often that emotions are bad, certain emotions are bad, and that we should suppress them, we shouldn't have them, we shouldn't allow them.
Yeah.
But we should, shouldn't we? Because it's the suppressing of the emotions that really can make us sick and can make us really unwell. So you talk about 8 steps to allowing emotions, and that's, I guess, as you know, given that we're all conditioned not to allow certain emotions.
We're conditioned to resist them completely.
Yeah.
And when with our condition, we resist with our true self, we just allow. And then when we allow, what can happen, and I'll talk to you about how to do that in a moment, but when we allow, what can happen is we can allow it. Then from that vantage point of allowing, we can still decide to take action from the emotion, or we can decide that it's not, we don't need to take action. It's just okay to let this emotion pass through. But if we do that from a more peaceful decision from the allowing, rather than a habitual response, which is like I put my hand on something hot and pull it off, because it's more of a reflex response when we don't know how to allow the sensations of the emotion. So in order to do that, though, the first thing to realize is that what an emotion is a physiological sensation in our body. While it's energy, we notice it because it feels physiologically in our body. So the first step into allowing an emotion would be to observe, yes, I've got this name of this emotion, so I feel guilty, but what does guilt mean to me? Is it like, is it an ache in my chest? Is it a knot in my stomach? For me, it's a knot in my stomach. And my heart sinks a little, I can feel heaviness in my heart. But the first step is to just notice what these physiological sensations are. That's step one. That's really, really important, because we're only trying to stop our body from feeling unpleasant. That's all we're trying to do.
Excellent. Well, we'll hear about the step after that in a moment. But first, it's time to hear from our sponsors again. I'll be back with Patrick, plus a few words on our plant of the day from medical herbalist Karen Brines-McLean, right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and with me today is Patrick Mirando, a holistic psychologist who has been telling us how we might identify and allow our emotions. We heard step one. Here he is with the next step.
The second step is to then breathe into it. So we breathe into it. And we imagine our breath going into it and surrounding it completely. And then we can give it space. So we can recognize it, like we said before, we don't really know where emotions come from, but they are there. And our body is a huge vastness of space. It's not just this physically limited thing. So we can just imagine creating space and giving it space to exist there. And we can also respect it. We can also respect the emotions. You know, I always say to the sadness, you know, I respect you for helping me find happy. I respect you for grieving away my pain. When I feel disappointed, I respect you for helping me learn and reflect. And that's for me really, really important. It's just helping me be more of like, look at my emotions more as allies rather than enemies. Because conditioned-wise, we've viewed them as enemies.
Right. And both sides of the spectrum as well, because we're not really, it would seem, allowed to show emotion very much.
We get in trouble for being too happy as well. Like,
exactly.
Why are you so happy?
Yeah, exactly. Why are you so happy? What are you grinning about? Yeah, exactly. We've all heard that, haven't we? Yeah. Really, then, it's a very simple thing, but very difficult to get to, I suspect. Well, it's taken me years to get to a point where I think I might be anywhere near knowing my true self. And I think for me, the eye-opener is that the true self isn't contained. It's not something which is just contained in a human body, but part of it is. But it's much greater than that.
That's right. And it's also not a static state. So even if I know my true self, it's more I know better how to not get in the way of living as my true self. because our true self was constantly evolving. So, you know, my true self really might love vanilla ice cream, and tomorrow it might turn to chocolate. It probably won't happen just like that, but it can happen like that. It's a very dynamic state, and
Yeah.
it's a dynamic state of following where that energy flows, and knowing how to not get in the way of that energy through our conditioning.
Right, that's right. And I guess I might have confused people by saying that, you know, it's bigger than our body, but maybe you can express it a little bit better and explain what we mean by that. Because you talked earlier about consciousness, but consciousness is, many people say, all around us. So is it our little speck of our iteration of consciousness that we're talking about here?
Yeah, and I look at that, our soul doesn't belong to our body, our body belongs to our soul. So our body is part of our soul rather than the other way around. So we already are our true selves, and we just have a strand of consciousness that comes down. So for me, it feels like a power station with all the electricity. And you know, this is the wire that goes to that house, and that might be me. The wire that goes to your house is you. But we all come from a similar source up above. And there might be substations and substations above that. And so the energy just comes down. And each strand of energy is going to run through us individually. So while it all comes from the same place, it's, you know, it's going to bring you to maybe want to follow this path and me to follow this path. And that's fine. That's what it's there for. It's for us to find our own unique journey and connect with that electric strand, or that, I call it also in the book, I call it the flow of our specific river or our specific current.
Yeah, I love that metaphor there of being a stream of electricity, because we are electrical beings, actually. That's a perfect way of looking at it. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, so it's actually, as I keep saying, very simple. And yet, because of all the conditioning that we have undergone since birth, it can be so hard for us to let go of those beliefs, those thoughts, wherever the thoughts come from. I think part of the difficulty of letting go, you may correct me, I mean, you may think I'm absolutely barking up the wrong tree here, but part of the difficulty of letting go of those thoughts is that we are so conditioned, so heavily conditioned into accepting that that is reality.
Yeah, and they're also self-perpetuating, though. So in terms of the thoughts, believing them makes me feel part of the crowd, makes me feel part of society. So when I feel part of society, that's part deep within us. We want that because we're, you know, we have our human part of us and our evolutionary part of us, which wants to feel safe within the crowd. So every thought we had is perpetuates itself, and every belief we have perpetuates itself. So unless we understand why, how it's perpetuating itself, then we're going to find it a lot harder to let go of, rather than just saying, that's just an unhelpful belief, let it go. We want to understand, what's it holding on to? How's it trying to serve me? And once I understand how it's trying but not working, then it's a lot easier to let go.
And
a lot of times it's trying to help us just feel better. That's really all it's doing. Feel better doesn't necessarily mean feel good. It could also mean feel safer. It could be meaning feel more down, because that's what feels safer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a whole other thing to get into, isn't it? Yeah, the negative emotions can be actually where you feel best. That's
right.
That sounds like a paradox, but it's true,
it
isn't
does,
it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, and I used to use the word best, but then I really tried to just use the word safer or more
yeah.
familiar.
Yeah, and, yeah, apologies because, for using that word, yeah.
No, I get it completely, but it's because it really eventually doesn't make us feel best. It just makes us feel secure for that moment.
Yeah, but I guess we feel it's best, or we feel that it's the place that we'd rather be than any other, yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? And on a broader scale, how much would you say, because mental health is a huge issue, mental health, and we're talking about emotional health here, which people conflate, but how much of what we see as mental health issues would you say is down to this emotional issue and our inability to connect with our true self?
I'd probably say above 80%. I'm not sure exactly, but I'd say above 80%, and even up to 90%. There's definitely our chemical imbalances, hormonal issues that have come about, and so I'm not denying those parts, but a lot of it is our conditioning and our conditioned mind, and then how we relate to our emotional states and how we try to control our emotions. And we try to control our emotions in two ways. We do it with behavior, so physical things. So I might like eat to control my emotion. I might go shopping. I might get angry. But the more subtle way to control our emotions is through more thoughts. So for me, I was always a very logical person. So I'd feel an emotion and just logic it away. And so while that might be useful sometimes, overdoing that meant I suppressed all these emotions until they just had to pour out of me. So a lot of the time it's us trying to control emotions that causes more problems than just feeling an emotion and knowing how to navigate that, just knowing how to navigate a way out and through it.
Absolutely. And in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which I trained in, we talk about reframing. So how can you turn it around so that it's not as negative to you as it might have been? So, instead of looking at the negative, look at the positive. So what could the potential positive from this situation be? And you talk
And
about that in the book as well, don't you?
so I call it lighter perceptions.
Yes, you
So
do.
what I
Which is a
found,
nice way of putting it.
and I found that from myself. But my journey, I woke up, I think I was about 28 when I woke up to like my truth. And from that, I was acutely aware of that, but my emotions and my beliefs didn't match the truth. So every time I'd feel something, I'd say, no, that's not the truth. I'd say, logically, that's not how it's working. And so while I did that, my emotionally, I didn't agree with that. So what I had to do, and what I didn't have to do, but I practiced doing, I was like, I want to find a way to bridge from my emotion back to my truth rather than just trying to leap straight up. And so that really is me choosing more peaceful perceptions in a situation. So if I can think even just this much lighter than I am at the moment, that's bridging up that much. So sometimes reframing is fantastic, and it just really depends on the level we're ready to go to and to believe that. If we don't make it believable, then we're not going to hold on to that perception, and we're just going to revert back to our original perception and stay in that level of darkness within again.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally with you on that. Yeah, you have to make it workable and take baby steps if needs be. Yeah, and I'm minded in this regard of the work of Byron Katie, who just says, well, just ask yourself, is this true? And then, if you say, well, yeah, ask yourself again, is it really true? And often the answer is that what you are experiencing or thinking about in the past isn't true because it's just a construct. It's just a construct in the mind.
And we also want to say, like, so for me personally, I knew it wasn't true, but my emotions didn't care about that, so my emotions believed it. And so while I understood that part, sometimes it really is understanding, yes, that's very important to know, but it's also important to kind of know that while that's not true, this emotion is valid, and it's important for me to know how to feel that and feel it out without having to perpetuate it or without having to reinforce it.
That's a lovely point, actually. Yeah, that's a great refinement there. Yeah, and all of these things come together if we just bear in mind that this is not always us. This isn't always us, and there are ways through it. And you get to a point where you realize that a lot of people are saying a lot of things and speaking a lot of truth. It's up to us to work out what's going to work for us very often. But there are certain things which work really well most of the time. And I think your book's full of lots of them, lots of great words of wisdom in there. And we're sadly coming to the end of this. I've really enjoyed speaking with you today, Patrick. Where would people find out more about you? And I'm guessing the book is available everywhere.
Yes, the book is available everywhere, and it's just come out as audiobook as well. So I think
Fantastic.
that's on Spotify and Apple, a fair few places. And they can find out from me from Instagram is where I post a lot of videos. I post some short videos, and it's just at Patrick Mirando. I also have my website, www.patrickmirando.com. And I also offer individual sessions for the spiritual coaching side, or true self-coaching is what I call that. And I do that also. You can book that through the website too. So that's where you can find out about me. And I'm always happy to have a chat to people and hear from people. I really enjoy it, and I love making a difference. I love teaching what I've learned, and that's really my passion, me living my truth too.
I think that's brilliant. I love that. Love it. And long may you carry on doing so, because I think, especially these days, we need more of this. We all need to come home to who we are.
And that's where our well-being is.
And I think to anybody whose interest has been piqued by this chat that we've had just now, please do go and buy Patrick's book and go through it, read it, because you'll get some great insights there. So, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you, JJ. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Patrick Mirando there, talking to me from his home in Australia. His book again, which has to be my book of the day now, is called Waking Up to Yourself, A Guide to Living Your Truth, and it's well worth diving into. It's really thorough and informative, but it's also a very practical guide, which I love. Now, from book of the day to plant of the day, this time another common and very humble herb that a lot of people would just class as a weed. In fact, wouldn't even give it the time of day. It's plantain, not to be confused with the tropical banana-like fruit. This plant's erect, ribbed leaves are coming up all over the place here in the UK right now, and who better than Keren Brines-McLean, the garden herbalist herself, and a good friend of the show, to tell us all about its wonderful healing properties.
This is a plant that probably all of you will recognise because it is classified as a weed, but it's a really important medicinal weed to us. Now, it's thought that the Roman foot soldiers bought plantain up the country. So on their long marches, they introduced many plants to us through England and Scotland. And the reason they use plantain is it's a very good healing herb. It's a refrigerant and it's very good for treating blistered conditions. And what I learned about plantain when I was in herbal school was that the Roman foot soldiers would bind their feet with this plant and it would help to stop them getting blisters when they were on long marches. Now that's something I've tried myself. I always try and practice what I preach, and I have used these when I've been wearing new walking boots and feeling that rub that makes me think I'm going to get a blister later on, pack them into my socks and voila, no blisters. So it does seem to work very well for that. Now, I don't tend to get people coming into the consulting room looking for blisters, blister treatment on their feet, but I do get them coming in with blistering skin problems, hot inflamed eczemas that are weeping, that need a lot of cooling and healing. And that's when we would tend to use this plant. Now, if you actually look at the structure of it, it's got ribs right down the back of it. And these ribs would indicate there's a lot of structural integrity here. And it works on improving the structural integrity of the skin. So we'd use it as a healing herb, as an anti-inflammatory herb, and as a cooling refrigerant with an antihistamine effect. Now, when I talk about the skin, we talk about the outside skin, which is, of course, on the dermis, but we've got an inside skin on our body too, and that's our digestive system, our lungs, and our bladder and our sinuses. So that's our wet skin, our slimy skin. And this works very well on our slimy skin as well. So we use it for catarrhal congestion, we use it for hay fever, respiratory problems. I've had people with chronic bronchitis that have taken plantain on a regular basis and found it's really beneficial to their lungs. So just like on the outside of the body, if it's inflamed and angry and itisy, full of inflammation, then we would tend to use it on the inside of the body for the same sort of things. So we're looking at bronchitis, sinusitis, gastritis, or cystitis. Any of those conditions where we're seeing inflammation can respond really, really well to this plant. It's readily available, no contraindications. So as long as it's somewhere that's not been getting peed on by the local dogs, you can very safely pick some, make a herbal tea from it, and you've got a very good healing remedy. And the other thing that you can do is you can actually plant, pick the seed heads as well. Now these can be boiled and they make a nice mushroom flavoured stock that you can then use for soups. Or you can dry it and then grind it down and use it in things like breads as well or crackers, just to give you a little bit of extra nutrition. So very versatile plant for you and very, very readily available.
Medical herbalist Keren Brines-McLean there, out amongst the plantain, which you really do find everywhere here in the UK. I love that she's so knowledgeable, not just in terms of the healing properties of plants, but the lore and the history too. You can contact Keren online at thegardenherbalist.co.uk if you'd like a consultation online or in person. Now, I don't know about wrapping blisters in plantain leaves, but that wraps it up for today's show. Do head over to my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, and drop me a line or tag me on my social media to let me know if you've benefited from anything you've heard today. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more great guests, more information, and more practical alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.